Welcome to this episode of Sound Progress, the AXA IM podcast where we meet people driving progress on our climate commitments. By 2050, we aim to reach net zero across all our assets under management and our business operations. For our final episode of the year, we'll be speaking to Head of AXA IM's Macro Research Team, David Page.
Good morning.
Chief Investment Officer for Core Investments and Chair of the AXA IM Investment Institute, and a returning podcast guest, Chris Igo.
Hello.
And Dr. Rory Sullivan, economist and co-founder and director of Kronos Sustainability.
Hello.
And all of them will help us get an insight into the macroeconomic outlook for 2024 and discussing what impact that has for progress towards net zero. But before we begin, as we're approaching the end of the year, I want to ask all our guests what your New Year's resolutions are, and in particular regarding your environmental impact. Rory, do we start with you?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so my resolution is I'm not going to be a silent martyr anymore. So every morning and every evening I walk around the house, I turn off all the lights that have been left on by the rest of my family and say nothing. I've decided I am now going to accompany those activities with a grunt or a sound of disapproval so that they are aware at least I'm turning off the lights. They may not understand why, but I think it's important that I send a more effective signal to my family on energy usage.
Excellent. Chris?
I'm just going to continue to not buy food in packaging where possible, because it really winds me up that they use all this stupid plastic packaging around a pack of sausages or something. And on a more serious note, I've got a property in Cornwall, which hopefully we're going to do some work on this year in terms of improved water management and using natural materials on the outer walls to improve the breathability of the property.
Excellent. And David?
So we're sort of trying to complete the project of this year. So next year we take out our gas hob, and that will be the last bit of gas that we have in the house. So we'll have fully electrified over the course of quite painfully this year, but hopefully not quite so painfully for the new year.
Excellent. And my plan is to get either an EV or a plug-in hybrid based on the economics. Currently, I'm in a old school car, so fingers crossed that helps. Thank you so much, everybody. So David, perhaps we start with you to help us outline some of the key macroeconomic trends that we can see in 2024.
Yeah, so 23 was quite a surprising year for us, in the sense that we had looked to quite a marked slowdown in economic activity in many of the major economies, and actually those economies proved somewhat more resilient. As we go into next year, though, we do think that slowdown is coming through. We think from a US perspective, we're likely to see a slowdown that just narrowly avoids recession. So we're looking for a soft landing there. We think that in Europe, Eurozone, we see ongoing stagnation, but again, just about avoiding recession and hopefully seeing some pickup by year end. And same for UK, although the UK, I think, is going to be a little bit closer to it. And looking a little bit further afield, China had a difficult year in 2023, but provided a lot of stimulus at the back end. And that, we think, is going to encourage activity and acceleration on a quarterly basis in 2024 as well. Emerging markets as a whole, we think, are going to stay broadly stable, but we are looking at some deceleration in some of the headline larger economies there as well.
Thanks, David. And the other topic which is very popular in 2023 was inflation. Where do you see inflation going?
Yeah, so inflation fell back. I mean, regardless of the resilience of economic growth, headline inflation actually fell back. There was quite a global phenomena. But what was equally a global phenomena was that core levels of inflation remained that much firmer. So they did come off, but they weren't falling back quite as sharply. And I think as we move into this year, as we move into 2024, we'll be looking at a slowdown in core inflation to drive that inflation lower. Now, many are talking about that being the more difficult, harder mile to achieve. But we think that that should come through. What that requires is a softening in labour markets, because we do need to see unit labour costs falling back if we're going to see core falling back. That looks highly likely in Europe. It's more questionable in the US. And I think monetary policy and central banks are going to have to remain relatively restrictive to make sure that that's the case.
And you touched on the central bank piece. Where do you see that going?
Yeah, we think that the hikes are done across the board, actually. I mean, there are some areas Fed, maybe Bank of Canada, where it's a little bit more uncertain. But even there, we think that, that central bank peaks have been reached. So 2024 looks like a year of cuts. But we don't think it's going to be a year of sort of savage cuts. We're not looking for central banks to flood the system with more liquidity to provide significant more stimulus. Rather, what we see is a management of the restrictiveness. So as rates are level, but inflation starts to fall, real interest rates will continue to rise. And we think central banks will try and manage that, that sort of passive increase in restrictive policy just by cutting a bit. And we see central banks cutting from about the middle of the year and cutting gradually across the course of the second half and into 2025.
Thanks, David, for that. There are also a lot of big elections happening next year. What do we think is the impact of macroeconomics and which one of them are most globally consequential?
Yeah, I mean, it is a big year. We've got important elections across the board. I think though the most sort of globally influential election is going to be the US presidential election. It's not 100% clear who the two candidates are going to be, but it's very much looking like it's going to be a rematch between President Biden and President Trump. And polls more recently suggesting that President Trump might be the victor in such a matchup. It's going to be important though. I mean, what we've seen is President Biden introduced the Inflation Reduction Act, which was a significant commitment to increased clean tech and the implementation of that. And that seems to have turned a corner in terms of how much US citizens, US firms are investing in the US. So that's been material. But it's also come against a backdrop where, and this isn't a Biden problem, this has been something that has been the case for the US for a while, where deficit levels are extremely high and debt levels are projected to rise over the next few decades. So there's a question mark about fiscal space, and that isn't limited to the US. I think the higher level of interest rates elsewhere is also going to have an impact on fiscal space in other countries. And other countries also face elections. So the Eurozone is seeing elections coming through. The UK has elections. All of those are going to have to grapple with this diminishing fiscal space that we have. And then, of course, there are some very important emerging market ones, starting with the Taiwan election in January. So yeah, there's going to be a lot going on in terms of elections, a lot of government choices to come through, and difficult times for government against a backdrop of rising interest rates.
Thanks so much, David. And Chris, perhaps I'll get you in on this now, where we've heard the economics outlook for 2024. There's geopolitical tensions happening already and lots of elections coming up. What does an asset owner do? What's the outlook for the various asset classes?
Well, just as the economy was more resilient in 2023, particularly in the US, so was the performance of equity markets. And if we wind back 12 months ago, everybody was talking about potential recession and 2023 being the year of the bond. Well, that quite didn't play out as anticipated, and equity returns were very, very strong. We would look towards 2024 as being a year in which, you know, the macro backdrop is less supportive for equity markets. I mean, David's already talked about expecting weaker growth and weaker inflation, and that translates into probably less robust corporate revenue growth for companies. If revenue growth is going to be slower, it probably does have an impact on profitability as well, and therefore that won't be as strong a driver of equity returns. At the same time, we didn't fully anticipate the rise in bond yields during 2023, and that was driven mostly by the central banks remaining very hawkish in terms of their monetary policy stance. But it took bond yields to levels that we haven't seen since before the global financial crisis in 2008, 2009. And for a lot of long-term asset owners, that's created a very attractive opportunity to lock in to fixed income investments, getting yields that they haven't seen for a very long time. So higher returns from bonds is certainly on the cards, and we're already starting to see bond markets perform better. A lot of that return will come from the yield, the coupon on bonds, and that's a higher hurdle for equity markets. So I'd expect a more balanced outcome from the two major asset classes in 2024, with most of the risk being on the equity side. You mentioned, we've talked about the election outcomes. They can always generate some uncertainty, and it's quite telling at the moment that market pricing of an uncertainty or volatility is very low. And that is a bit of a red flag to me. And it suggests that the market may be a little bit complacent about some of the risks, both on the economic side, but also on the political side. The other point I'd make is we've had a lot of volatility in markets in the last 3-4 years as a result of COVID, as a result of the energy price shock, as a result of rising interest rates. When we're thinking about, you know, green finance and the environmental impact, actually some more stability in markets would be very helpful, because the volatility and poor returns across different asset classes has kind of put investors off thinking about committing capital to ESG-related or green-related investments. And the case needs to be made, again, I think, more strongly that these are long-term investments, and they don't need to be at odds with an expectation of financial return, but certainly more stable markets would help in that narrative.
Perfect. And Chris, towards the end, you touched on a topic which I'd like to get Rory in about: what does that mean for net zero progress? What's the outlook for that?
Well, I'm going to essentially start by saying that Chris and David have done a perfect setup job, because net zero, as with all of the other sort of big questions we need to answer, depend on the politics and the economics that we're faced with. The politics is likely to be relatively negative. You know, there is a strong likelihood of a Trump presidency. There is a drift to the right in Europe, as seen by Geert Wilders in the Netherlands. The UK has issued new licenses for oil and gas exploration, and sort of there's a signalling that certainly the Tory government will pull back from some of the UK's green commitments. So I would say the political headline picture is probably negative. The economic picture is actually, I think, somewhat more optimistic and somewhat different. So first is, by virtue of the large deployment of renewable energies over the last few years, we've seen costs come down. You know, so renewable energy is cost competitive, if not cheaper than conventional fossil fuels in many cases. We have seen the Inflation Reduction Act in the US and Fit for 55 in Europe. So we have seen governments throw significant amounts of money at incentivizing private investment in renewable energy in similar areas. We have seen governments, particularly in the wake of the energy crisis following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, at least start talking more about energy system resilience and energy independence. So they're all, I think, broadly positive for net zero. Of course, the downside, as both David and Chris mentioned, is diminished fiscal space or government headroom to do more in this space. I think government balance sheets are strained. It's not clear how much more they will be willing to subsidize greener energy, net zero. It's not clear how much appetite they would have for higher energy prices more generally, given the squeeze on consumer incomes. The consequence, because you did ask me to make a prediction, is that I think we may well see a lot of people drifting back from their headline net zero commitments. You know, the anti-ESG and anti-woke backlash in the US, probably the reality that achieving net zero is going to be very difficult for many companies. So I think we will probably see the rhetoric change. That said, I think the economic case for energy efficiency at the business level and the economics of renewable energy mean that I think people would still continue to invest in energy efficiency and renewable energy. When we dig down below the headlines, we're actually going to see quite a lot of investment and quite a lot of activity into particularly renewable energy and energy efficiency.
Rory, if I challenge you on that a bit, in terms of the IRA, has been mentioned a couple of times, which is the Inflation Reduction Act, the idea that in the US, given the general negativity around ESG, they called it inflation reduction to pass through such a big bill, which was essentially a lot focused on sustainability. Do you think that would be a way about how various politicians go about the positive economics that you mentioned versus the negative politics.
I think the US has also been a market where once subsidy or price regimes are in place, they tend to stay. It would be politically very unpopular to unwind those aspects of the Inflation Reduction Act, which are subsidies. The second is that it is worth noting that in the previous Trump presidency, there were no new coal-fired power stations built, nor were new coal mines opened. So I think this sort of fundamental economics around coal in the US also limit the likelihood that we will see significant investment in those areas. It's hard to imagine a rational investor putting significant amount of capital into assets that could easily be stranded. So I would say that I said it would be tough under Trump. But again, we need to look beyond the headlines and think, actually, where does the economics sit? Where did the existing incentives sit? And I would suggest that there's a lowish likelihood that they would be removed. The Inflation Reduction Act would probably get rebranded as something like the Coal for Everyone Act. But it's hard to see that they would materially change the underlying incentives that it provides.
Excellent. If I were to ask you the question about the physical effects of climate change on the economics, any thoughts on how we even think about that or account for that in outlooks?
From a forecasting perspective, it's obviously very hard, and particularly on a sort of short-term basis. The big impacts of climate change, we know, happen over decades, if not more. And so to the impact on any given year is very hard to anticipate. But undoubtedly, we are seeing some of those. You know, we are seeing bigger storms. We're seeing bigger floods. We're seeing much more damage done. That has impacts for the economies, for the insurance sectors as a whole.
I agree with David. It's very difficult to kind of incorporate these things into economic assumptions. But we know these things are happening. We know bad weather events happen, and it affects agriculture, it affects land use, and it creates market dislocations, and capital responds to that. So when we look through the lens of us as an equity investor, we're seeing lots of opportunities in technologies that are being developed to combat those market dislocations that themselves are a result of climate change. And I'm thinking about the obvious things like renewable energy, biofuels and so on, vertical farming, more sophisticated use of satellite imagery in land use to detect where there's threat of soil erosion. All these technologies are helping both in climate change adaption, but also providing investment opportunities.
I want to ask my guests one final question. Is there something we should be optimistic about in 2024?
From my perspective, we're looking at an economy that's slowing, that's going to see the inflation pressures finally drop away and create a base from which we can see acceleration in economic activity over the rest of the decade. I would also think on a climate basis, there are a number of climate advisories now that are suggesting that possibly 2023 has seen peak emissions. So if we're very lucky, then maybe 2024 sees lower greenhouse gas emissions than this year.
Chris?
What I see when I look at some of the technologies is a non-linear growth, so exponential growth, as the cost of these technologies continues to come down with technological innovation. And that means it becomes much more economic to use cleaner technologies, displacing legacy technologies. We've already seen it in the energy sector. We're seeing it in transportation. I think we're going to start to see it in the harder to abate sectors of the economy, like, you know, steel, chemicals, and so on. And, you know, it's a powerful force when you get these non-linearities changing the, you know, the long-term cost curves of different technologies. And that will happen because it's a natural result of economic progress. What worries me is that the policy environment doesn't keep up with it.
Rory?
Over the past 5 years, we have seen massive deployment at scale of a range of energy efficiency, renewable energy technologies. Two things have happened. One is the economics have changed, which I've talked about earlier. Secondly, the technology has been proven. So we are actually at a point where I think that many of the technologies are now demonstrably reliable, effective, and work. We're at a point where the economics for many of these works and is attractive. I'm reasonably optimistic that the technology and economic arguments will be sufficiently compelling that people will see through the political noise that we're inevitably going to face over the next couple of years. So mine is for long-term perspectives in a short-term world.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, David, Chris, Rory, for joining us for this final episode of 2023. And thank you to our listeners who've been with us throughout the year, talking and listening about various aspects of sustainability. And I hope that 2024 brings you with the same optimism that our guests had. Goodbye, and do take care of yourself, and if you can, of the planet too. This marketing communication does not constitute, on the part of AXA Investment Managers, a solicitation or investment, legal or tax advice. This material does not contain sufficient information to support an investment decision. The value of your investment can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. Please see the website www.axa-im.com/soundprogress for full disclaimer.